Good evening and welcome to the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees regular meeting for today, October 17th. The board met in closed session to discuss the superintendent's goals and provide direction for that. Is there a consensus on the order of business from the board? Dr. Valentine.
Mr. President, draw the board's attention to item number 10, which is on the action consent agenda, which is to approval to apply for after-school education and safety grant funds. That grant is in the process of being developed and will not be on the agenda tonight.
Okay. So we'll pull item number 10 from the consent agenda. I'm going to pull the board at this point to see if the board has an interest in ending this meeting no later than 9 o'clock this evening.
Yes.
Okay. We have a fairly short agenda, but we do have an important agenda this evening. We'll be talking about our strategic planning. Let's move on to our action, which is approval of the minutes. Does anybody like to make a motion on the approval of the minutes for October 3rd?
I move to approve the minutes, but I also have a question.
Yes. Let's see. Mr. Spadafore would. Okay, Mr. Spadafore will second it. Mrs. Botwin will make the motion. Did you have a question, Mrs. Botwin?
Yes, I do. On page 6, yes. item number 20.
Yes, that was a. I was going to bring that one up.
So. Okay, good. It was not Mr. Unger raised the question of the badminton court markings for San Luis High School. It was Mrs. Botwin.
Yes. So with that correction, any other corrections from board members? Okay. All in favor of accepting the minutes for October 3rd?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Moving on to correspondence. The board did not receive any correspondence. Public comment. We have one request for public comment. Mr. Buckman.
I'm going to submit one for the entire year. I'd like to thank the board for this opportunity that we're going to have tonight on the strategic planning process. Last week, I was able to participate in a process over at Laguna Junior High that was instigated by the principal, Mr. Anderson. In cooperation with the PTA, we did put on a presentation by iSafe, which is the federally approved, federally funded program for internet safety. It was a Thursday night, and we had 50 parents there, so I feel sorry for some of the merchants down at Farmers Market, but it was very important to be there. There will be a second meeting, January 18th, on the same topic at the same location, 6 p.m., at Laguna Junior High. There was a request by a student who attended, the only student, to allow students to attend, so we'll probably do a student meeting, and it was just wonderful. Great suggestion, and I can't believe that we hadn't thought about it. There was also a request for a more organized approach within the community for safety on the internet, and so we'll be looking at that as well. The PTA on November 20th will be hosting a community training on the use of the Megan's Law database and also on parent training on how to deal with their children if, in fact, they do find somebody that lives in their neighborhood who is not so nice. So everybody's welcome to that meeting as well. That'll be out at the County Office of Education. Thank you.
Anybody else who'd like to speak to the board in public comment? Okay. Let's move on to item number 1, reports by school staff. I don't see any student representatives here, but are there reports from any school staff? Okay, seeing none. We'll move on to item number 2, status of the state budget.
At this time, there's not a whole lot to report. We're in election mode in Sacramento, so there hasn't been any bills introduced or acted upon in a long period of time, 4 weeks or so. So until after the election, I don't expect to have too much to report back on what's going on in Sacramento.
Great. Item number 3, summer school report. Mr. Halfman.
Summer school report. No, it's good.
No, it's on the screen.
Oh, that's not so good.
Yeah, oh, then do a seat space anyway.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to introduce my colleague, Kathy Ahern, with 14 years of San Luis Coastal Summer School experience, was our summer school administrator for this last summer.
Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. Let's see if I can put this down here. Thank you. This summer, we had five elementary schools to service. Three elementary schools to service the K through five students. We had intervention classes as well as enrichment classes, ESY, which is extended school year classes, and then at the middle school level, we provided. We provided classes for students that need to make up coursework, such as English 8, English 9, English 10, excuse me, as well as classes like reading skills to service the sixth grade and Math Plus to service the sixth grade students who are in need of intervention. And as an overview, we had around 676 elementary students, and between two sessions at Laguna Middle School and Los Osos Middle School, we served around 937 students. So right now we're going to show you the results of intervention. We did a baseline, a Houghton Mifflin baseline intervention pre- and post-test on all the students in the language arts intervention classes. And as you can see at, it's not the signal part, it's the, we found that at grade levels first, third, fourth, and fifth, the students made an increase in their intervention. We incorporated library time this year, was something that we did not have for the past couple years, and we felt that that helped the language arts students. We also incorporated the Read Naturally Fluency Labs at all the sites, the elementary sites, which is something new. We only had it at Del Mar in the past. And with the help of Del Mar staff, Janet Gould, Marianne Britton, we were able to set up fluency labs at both Monarch Grove and C.L. Smith this year, which worked really effectively. So what we did is on our baseline, as you can see, except for second grade, all the grades made a significant increase in their pre and post tests. And I looked at the second grade to analyze and see what happened. And of 26 students, 8 students dropped from their pre and their post test. Something that we're going to look at this summer. If you were to pull those 8 students out of those 26 and look at the 18, those 18 made a significant increase from a 54% in their pre test to a 64%. In their post-test. So we need to look at what we can make, how we can help the second grade curriculum to be more effective so that we can get all 26 students to make an increase in their assessments for next summer. In the math, we did a math assessment that we incorporated Scott Forsman end of the year test assessment. We gave a pre-test and a post-test, and Barry Pinley helped us put all the assessments together. And as you can see, at every grade level, the students made increases in their pre and their post-test. They also had access to math labs, which helped tremendously. And the students that were in both language arts and math really got intense focus on just that area, either math or language arts, which helped to see an increase in those 19 days. And at the secondary level, we serviced around 937 students in two sessions. Each session ran about 13 to 14 days. And as you can see, we listed all the titles and how many credits were issued. So for the summer, 4,220 credits were issued out this summer, which we felt the teachers did a phenomenal job. We actually went up in hours this summer by 6,000 as compared to last summer. So we felt that it was very successful.
You may recall last year we showed you the results from summer school, breaking it down into two categories, students who had attended 80% or more of summer school and students who had attended less than 80%. And it showed a dramatic difference in the gains that those students made. This year, we lumped everybody together, just to present it a little differently, but something that we're showing you this year for the first time is the difference between the number of students who pre-enroll, the number of students who show up day one, and the number of students who actually complete the program. And what you'll see, and again, this is for intervention elementary students only. So the blue line shows you that the teachers did a really good job of getting everybody who needs to get signed up for summer school signed up, but there is some drop-off between getting signed up and then getting there and then completing there. And we're looking at ways to address that this year with our follow-up with parents later in the year. We're exploring the opportunities for some transportation support for summer school that may help parents be able to get their kids there. But again, it's kind of like the pink medicine. You know, when you get it from the pediatrician, he tells you even if you're feeling better after 2 days, you still have to finish the whole bottle. And that's really the way summer school is. You need to be there the whole time, get the whole dose. In truth, elementary summer school is only 19 days. But in that 19 days, we can make a huge amount of progress with a student because we're concentrating on one subject, language arts or math. There's no PE, there's no music, there's no art, there's no social studies. It's all language arts, it's all math. It's that one identified area that the student needs the most help in. And we can help them. We just need to make sure that the community, the parents, get them there for the full time. And again, we're finished in elementary by the end of July, and I know it becomes a challenge for parents in terms of scheduling vacations and making that work. But we will have the information to the elementary schools in time for first conferences again, and the teachers have been doing a great job. They let the parents know very early on. Little Clarence still kind of struggling in reading here in the fourth grade, and we should be looking forward to summer school this year to help him out, set that seed in the parents' minds so they can long-term plan so that they tell grandma they'll be visiting in August this summer rather than July so that junior can attend the full summer session. So again, our goal would be to have the blue line and the yellow line be identical so that everybody who needs summer school is there for the full dose, and they would all show the kind of progress that students who attend 80% have shown traditionally. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me ask what I don't know if it's the simpler question, might be the shorter one. The C.L. Smith discrepancy there seems significantly, well, from my angle, looks very large. Is that a student population issue, a socioeconomic issue? Do we know enough about it?
Well, interestingly enough, the Del Mar Summer School is our Morro Bay site, which is really the Del Mar student body. So they've done a very, very good job of getting their kids into their summer school. And getting from Morro Bay to Del Mar is an experience that people are familiar with. So they show up at their regular school, and they take a week off, and then they're in summer school, and the Del Mar staff is working hand in glove with us to make that work. Similar to that, in Los Osos, we have two schools, and they're in close proximity geographically, so the students that are in Los Osos, they're either Monarch students or they're Baywood students, and to get to the other site doesn't seem to be a logistics or as much of an issue. In San Luis Obispo, we're drawing from a number of schools at much greater distances and with less familiarity, I guess I would say, with kind of who Smith is and where Smith is. And so, again, that's something we hope to address this summer. I've already been working with Denise Gallo and with Russell Miller to look at what kinds of transportation support we may be able to provide. And, again, we're looking at that exact same issue, saying how can we make sure that as many kids get there as possible. Last year, for the first time, for the first time in a long time, we've sporadically had a migrant ed bus, sporadically based on funding. Last year, we were able to provide a migrant ed bus and kind of have some other kids jump on as well that ran from Hawthorne to Smith. So we hope to expand that this year.
And my other question dealt with the sixth graders being serviced at the middle school levels. Philosophical facilities, what's the experience been like?
Well, at the point at which June 14th comes around in sixth grade, in their mind, they've graduated and moved on to bigger and better things. And the curriculum that we have available for them is at the middle school. And again, to concentrate that group, there's kind of an economy. We usually end up with a single class anyway. To try and service them at other sites spread out would be even more of a challenge. I can tell you it's certainly a little bit unnerving for parents as they arrive the first day of summer school and somebody's there with a mohawk and a beard, you know, getting out of their car and their little darling.
That's just the teacher, right?
Their little darling's getting out of their car and they come in and they're a little nervous and we try to reassure them that it all actually works out pretty well.
How long are the sessions, like for the elementary children?
8:15.
It goes from 8:15 to 12:30, and it's Monday through Thursday.
And if they're in class, they're probably doing half reading and then half math from 8:15 to 12:30?
The kids are either in a math intervention or reading language arts. So students that are in the math are in math from 8:15 to 12:30.
Well, I was just wondering, just thinking about it, you know, it's probably a difficult subject for them, or they wouldn't be in this program in the summer. And it's kind of hard to do something from 8:15 to 12:30 that's difficult, that you don't maybe enjoy that much. So I was thinking about, you know, what could you do to make it, I mean, I don't know, I'm just brainstorming, but maybe a little bit of PE music and art thrown in as an incentive at the end of the day, if you get X amount done, or something like that, or maybe at the end of a big swimming party, if you make it to the last day. I mean, I don't know, a few things that would, you know, help them stay there and keep coming. I don't know.
You know, that's certainly true. And I think that experience, you know, what happens sometimes at the high school, if a student is doing poorly in math, the thought may be, well, let's give him a couple of math classes so that he can, you know, double up or triple up, and then he'll for sure get it. And there's a point of diminishing returns for somebody for whom math is not their favorite subject. But I think you'll find in summer school that the teachers are very sensitive to that issue, and they're very creative. It's not going to be 4 hours of drill because they just won't get the results that they need. And again, these are intervention students that we're talking about. We do run an enrichment summer school as well, and that runs kind of the whole gamut, and it's a little bit more open-ended. But you'll find a lot of creative, fun, engaging things going on in those classes. I've seen the math classes going out and doing kind of live sundials, and so the kids aren't, you know, just drilling away on worksheets for 4 hours and kind of coming out of there wrung out. They come out with a smile on their face. The teacher is really looking to get kind of that long-term results. And again, even with our groups of ESL students, there's a lot of creative, fun things going on that it's fun to visit the classrooms and see how clever the teachers are at getting this collective group of kids that have struggled into a positive mode and getting them heading in the right direction. It's inspirational.
That sounds awesome. Thank you.
Any other questions from board members? Okay. Let's move on then to the action consent agenda. Is there anybody in the public that would like to speak to an item on the action consent agenda? Seeing no one, let's move on to that. Please just let us know if you'd like to pull an item. Item number 4, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 5, acceptance of donations. Number 6, disposition of surplus property. 7, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 8, approval of purchase orders. 9, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, and that regards the Williams settlement. Okay, Mrs. Roger would like to pull number 5. And then number 10 was pulled by request from Dr. Valentine. So would somebody like to make a motion for those items, please?
I'll make a motion. Okay. That items 4, 6, 7, 8, and 9 be approved.
Somebody like seconded by Mrs. Dickinson. The motion was made by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor of items 4, 6, 7, 8, and 9? Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Mrs. Roger, item number 5.
Item number 5 is acceptance of donations. And this is something that we see in our board book for every board meeting. And people are very generous in the ways in which they donate to the district. And typically we don't mention specific donations by name, but I was just so astounded and taken by the fourth bullet, which reads, James and Rosanna Medeiros donated $2,241.54 to Conrad L. Smith School to cover transportation costs for a field trip to the Monterey Bay Aquarium. I thought that was really an astounding donation and a wonderful gift for our students, and I wanted to make specific mention of it. Thank you. I'll move approval of item 5.
I have one more comment, too. As long as Marilyn went with that, then I really have to pull up. That was enormous. That was a beautiful thing that they did. But going back to the first adopt, Del Mar Elementary School Parent Teacher Association donated $1,000 to the school for the purchase of level books. And the Laguna Middle School Parent Teacher Association, $776. The San Luis County Arts, I'm going to go through them all. San Luis Obispo County Arts Council awarded a grant in $297 to the elementary school teachers. Thank you so much to all of you, even from the $5 up to the $5,000. Our kids are grateful, and so are we.
Since they pulled this item, I just wanted to call attention also to the Arts Council grants. I'm on the board of the Arts Council, and it's near and dear to my heart. But the reason I want to take this opportunity is to encourage teachers and staff throughout the year. There's Arts Council grants available in visual, performing arts, poetry, a whole gambit. And currently, the Arts Council, including the PTA and Mr. Buckman, among others, is working on trying to coordinate an awards program with the Reflections program that the PTA has been doing. So there's some wonderful things happening in the arts, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about them. And thank you.
Okay, would somebody like to make a motion for item number 5?
I'm trying. I'll move approval of item 5.
Second.
Moved by Mrs. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Okay, let's move on to item number 12, which is the advance agenda. Does anyone have anything that they'd like to discuss for advance agenda items? Mrs. Botwin.
I had talked to Rick last week, and he was supposed to get back to me, and he hasn't. But on the next item, I'm going to mention that I did go to the Personnel Commission meeting last Wednesday and enjoyed it very much. And I make an effort to go as often as possible because I know you guys are working. And not that I'm not working, but I'm not working like you're working, if you know what I mean. I enjoy them, and one of the things that I discovered at the last couple of meetings I've been to is that they spend a lot of time, they get work like we do, that comes to their home, and they have to spend time reading over, reviewing, they make calls back and forth to other people, to members of the staff and other people, and then they come to the meeting like we do, fully prepped and fully prepared and with brilliant ideas. We pay them and have paid them for the last, 6, 7, 8 years, $25 a meeting. Okay, $25 a meeting for some of them coming from Los Osos and elsewhere. That's, not even a lot for gas mileage or anything like that. But anyway, I asked Rick if I should bring this up particularly at the board meeting, or would the administration like to bring it forward? And since he didn't get back to me about this, I'm going to go ahead at this time. And with your agreement and consent, could we put that on a future agenda to review the stipend that we pay to the Personnel Commission for what they do and perhaps give them a raise?
Mr. Robinette, and then we'll see if anybody else would like to support that.
I'm always here, Mrs. Botwin. I do apologize for not having gotten back to you earlier on the question. As you know, Mrs. Botwin asked for me to research on how the Personnel Commission could get a raise. And I did finally find that out late this afternoon. It was kind of a task for me to search Ed Code and also contact personnel commissions up and down the state because there aren't that many of them. The personnel commission can only vote themselves a raise. They're an independent body, just as you are. Ed Code specifies they cannot pay themselves more than $50 a meeting. They currently get paid $25 a meeting, and they would have to bring that forward as an action item themselves to give themselves a raise, approve it, then it would be part of their annual budget that would come to the school board to be approved. So the action actually has to begin with the PC.
Okay, well, thank you. I guess that answers that question then.
It does, and with the board's consent, may I take that information back to the next personnel commission meeting and let them know?
So you or Mr. Robinette?
Okay. All right. We'll both do it.
Right, and yeah, I guess we what Mrs. Roger is suggesting that the board discuss this at our meeting and that we typically support their budget and the budget that's approved by them, and we understand that they are entitled to vote themselves a raise if they'd like to. Does that sound like I got it? Okay.
I'd just like to have the record reflect that although Mr. Robinette's information was tardy, it was timely.
That's true. And it was definitely PC. Let's move on to item number anybody else got anything? Oh, Mrs. Dickinson, I'm sorry.
Couple things. One is on the cover sheet for this item. On the third bullet, a majority vote of the board is required to establish a study session on any topic. Study session topics will be identified and developed as follows, and there's 8 steps. But I think we decided in step number 7, conduct follow-up summary at a subsequent meeting, and we crossed out or in the Friday packet, as I remember, because we decided we were going to discuss it at a meeting. Isn't that correct? So maybe that could be changed there. And the other one is teacher academic freedom. This keeps, you know, reappearing and kind of floating along like a ping pong ball on the pool. But we don't really do anything with that. It got moved to be addressed in a Friday packet rather than an agenda item. But I had 2 experiences the last week that make me think about this, that I do think this is an important topic, this teacher academic freedom. It came up in a discussion months ago about, you know, only showing videos that were approved in my mind. But I was having a discussion with my administrator who came to observe my classroom, and we were discussing a lot of different things. And in the course of this conversation, he happened to say, I don't really think, we have a lot of administrators, so you won't know which one I'm talking about. He happened to say, I don't really think teaching is a profession anymore because teachers don't really have that much control about their decisions in the classroom. And I thought it was such an interesting comment. And then in my class, I'm taking 2 classes at Cal Poly, and one was an independent study for people working on their research papers. Several of the teachers in that group, and they're working on research projects to write up over 3/4, have an issue with how many minutes. They have people observing their class and keeping track of how many minutes. There's certain minutes for every topic and things they would like to do that they cannot do because of the pressure with No Child Left Behind. And this is in many districts. This is not necessarily our district. This is Guadalupe and all kinds of districts. But it was across the board a concern that teachers are losing control of the ability to use their expertise and their training and their intelligence and their experience and their knowledge of the children to make professional decisions about curriculum and curriculum, you know, what to teach and how to teach it. So I just think it's an interesting topic that, especially in our sort of ever-controlled and more oppressive society where people are being busted, you know, for saying certain things in the academic world, whether it be political or whatever, you know, what their children see at art museums or what they say about comparing leaders or things like this, they're getting in trouble for those kind of things. And that may be at the university level and not necessarily. So I think it's an interesting topic that I think I'm glad it's still showing up, but we don't really do much with it yet. But I'd like it to at least stay hovering there, and I wouldn't mind your ideas along the way, or just of how that could be looked into, or maybe it's not an issue for anyone in this district. Maybe everyone feels really happy about it all. I don't know.
I want to mention something. You brought up the issue about the summer school, Adrienne, and then Marilyn made a comment which was in sync with what I was thinking, is that maybe those 4 hours of math or the 4 hours of language arts, there was a great deal of freedom for the teacher to be diverse in going out to do things and other ways of looking at it without having to teach exactly to a format. And the fact that the kids did so well is something we want to look at, too, in terms of if the academic freedom allows the student to flower. In agreement with you that we need to look at this.
It's on the advanced agenda items. We would need a majority vote in order to make this an official study session. Is there interest from the vote from the board to do that? Yeah, please, Mr. Millar.
Well, I mean, I guess if we were going to discuss it, I would like to see it as a study session solely because I'm not sure what it is we're discussing. So hopefully by squeezing it through the 8-step process, I would have an idea what it is we're talking about.
So are you suggesting that we would, just to clarify, we would begin the 8-step process if that's something that a majority of the board is interested in?
Well, I guess I don't want to just dismiss it, but I'm not really sure what it is we'd be addressing. And this process is to help us figure out what it is we're going to be addressing. So maybe we do it preliminarily, go through it and decide whether or not, from that standpoint, from what we come up with, we want to take it and in which direction of study session, agenda item. That. But, I mean, I kind of hear what you're voicing, and I would like to make sure the public understands. The administrator you were discussing does not work for San Luis Coastal School. Okay. Not that he said anything terrible or anything. It's just, yeah. And then I think some of your comments related to problems for a college professor. I'm not sure, though. So I guess it's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But so for me, I guess I would want to understand it a little better. I'm interested in, because I'm a lay person, as far as teaching is concerned. Not entirely, but that's another story. I think I would like to understand the impact of curriculum, state-driven curriculum standards and all that on the teaching experience. And that would help me understand maybe your concern about academic freedom better.
Yeah, I like the way Walter put that at the end there. I've had discussions with teachers in our district about their concerns regarding the rigidity with which they have to put forward the curriculum and the fact that there isn't room for creativity. So I know that there are concerns out there, and like Walter, I don't know exactly what form it would take as a study session, but I think that we have this whole protocol now that should flesh it out for us. If we want to go ahead and agendize it, then we can begin that process. I think it would be of great interest to teachers.
Thank you. There are many things that I have problems with. I'll be the first one to admit. And I always think that issues that are raised, which have merit, sometimes have a difficult course because you can't really understand what exactly the scope is or what the issues are. And I really feel the same thing that Walt's saying and what Marilyn's saying. I think to have a general discussion about that may not pertain to what is happening in our district. So I think first we want to define what it is within our district that this may pertain to or may apply to. And it would be nice, it would be helpful for me if there could be some information provided to either you, Adrienne, from sources within the district to help identify what direction this needs to go into or what may be developed or what has to be discussed, because I think that would be better. I don't think you get to a study session until you have a fairly well-defined issue that you can start asking specific questions about and then know what involvement staff will have. Because right now, I think we need to go a little bit further to develop some underlying factors.
And it sounds like we, I don't know if you have anything to say, David, it sounds like we have at least five people that are interested in moving forward on the process of discussing what this topic might look like going through our steps is. Okay, so we will need to have a motion and a vote on that, I believe. Somebody like to make a motion? Okay. Well, I think we're moving to moving forward on the on whether to start asking the questions, because is that your understanding, Dr. Valentine, that we would need to make a motion now to move forward? Okay. So it's been moved by Mrs. Dickinson and seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 13, which is reports by board members and district administrators. Well, I just want to make sure that everybody knows that this coming Thursday night is the Teacher of the Year dinner at the Madonna Inn, and that's where we celebrate all the teachers in San Luis Obispo County, and particularly our Teacher of the Year, Guy Crabb, from Del Mar Elementary School. And we're proud of Guy, and we look forward to seeing Guy then. And then I believe that next Thursday, the 26th, is the Teach Dinner. And that's also at the Madonna Inn. Is there anybody here that is that date correct? I want to make sure before I put that out there. I believe it is the 26th. Please see a Teach board member. I can think of a couple from my area, Janet Gould at Del Mar Elementary School and Lori Newman in Los Osos, who are board members, Maria Slavin, also from the coast. I'm sorry, I can't name anybody from in town right now, but the tickets are $75. The money goes to the Teach Foundation, which goes to support our teachers here in our classrooms in San Luis Coastal Unified School District. They've given out thousands of dollars worth of grants, and that's impacted thousands of students. So I would invite anybody that's interested to purchase a ticket. And Mr. Spadafore reminds me that Diana Barnhart will be speaking of her experiences, and Diana was just named one of the alumna of the year at Cal Poly, and that's very exciting as well. So that should be on the 26th. Please do your part and buy a ticket and support the Teach folks. Okay. Well, then, let's move on then to our study session, which is on strategic planning. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Valentine. Dr. Valentine, do we need a break? Okay, we'll take how long do you need? 3 minutes? Aussie? Okay. The board will take a 5-minute recess, and unless Mrs. Holmes tells us she needs more time. Crowd of luminaries here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the opportunity to share tonight on our 0607 strategic plan. We've provided backup for tonight's study session, and the backup takes the board's previously determined questions and regarding the 0607 strategic plan and provides responses. We've tried to be simple because, frankly, while implementing the plan itself will be difficult, the concept of the plan and what we're trying to do is quite simple. We'd like to take a few minutes at the beginning to talk about that and then open it up for discussion. One criticism of strategic plans is that they frequently wind up unused on a shelf, sometimes an exercise in process and wishful thinking. Our plan comes down to clarifying a mission and goals, identifying critical issues, developing objectives, and then funding the implementation of those objectives. Our mission reflects a commitment to all students to provide them an opportunity to realize their potential. We can easily get into a philosophical debate about the definition of potential, but there's no philosophical debate about the definition of all. Our mission, if it is truly our mission, leads us to ask if all of our children are succeeding. The most critical issue we identified is that certain of our students are not doing well. Those students can be identified and grouped. There are students who are poor, students who are learning English, and students with learning disabilities. The upper chart shows the disparity in achievement between all students on the left and economically challenged students, special education students, and English learners, respectively. The lower chart moves away from comparing a subgroup to all students, of which the subgroup is a part, to a comparison of a subgroup with those who aren't in the subgroup. In this case, we see the difference in performance in language arts between English learners and those who aren't, and the difference is even more dramatic. We further recognize that the numbers and the percentages of these students are growing. The top chart shows how district enrollment has declined over the past several years and how the population of English learners has increased over the same period of time. And finally, we recognize that we have the knowledge and the means to do better. And this is what our strategic plan is about, and we call it closing the achievement gap. We translated this into some specifics. I'll draw your attention to the 2006-2007 implementation objectives, which are on page 9 in the backup. But some samples include that every first grade child needing help with reading will receive one-to-one specialist help. Every elementary child wanting to participate in extended day academic help will be provided a ride home. Every English learner at levels 1 or 2 will receive daily assistance from a specialist in English language development. Teachers will be trained in a new way to identify special education students, which emphasizes assistance. And for students of poverty and others for whom college is a distant thought, we will dedicate resources to put college within reach. As I mentioned, the plan is difficult and simple. The board supported this plan with a budget. In tonight's backup, we shared with the board the notion that budget is policy. Whatever the district's mission might be, whatever its goals, the budget will steer what actually happens. We like to believe that the budget looks like the strategic plan with fewer words. So for every first grade child needing help with reading, we have reading recovery, $165,000. Every child wanting extended day academic help will be given a ride home. The budget translates that into late bus after school, $32,000. For elementary English learners who will receive daily assistance from a specialist in English language development, the budget translates that into EL specialist K-6, $239,000. And for students of poverty and others for whom college is a distant thought, we will dedicate resources to put college within reach, translates into AVID, $55,000, and so forth. And so what has been done and will get done? Each instructional item identified in the budget, and thus every item identified in the 2006-2007 objectives, has a one-page worksheet and a defined outcome. Since most of these were developed before the school year began, they are expressed in the future tense. In fact, all are in operation right now, and we are prepared to discuss any one of them that the board wishes, or all of them. The board has asked questions about how to change the plan and add to the plan or re-examine the plan. We would suggest that there are ways to do this. But first, the purpose of a plan is to define a disciplined approach to a set of objectives. By being focused, we create efficiency and increase the likelihood of accomplishing those objectives. There is, however, logic in making sure that the objectives are right, that they are doable, and that there are a realistic number of them. If we determine that the objectives are wrong or they can't be done or that there are too few or too many of them, then we need to consider change. In the backup, we suggested a protocol for considering change. For any new proposal, what is the issue being addressed? What is the objective? How would this be implemented? What is the effect of this upon the rest of the plan? What are the workload and staffing implications? What is the cost? And shall we proceed? The capacity of the district to produce work is finite. In addition to the strategic plan, every ongoing function of the district continues, and each item of the plan adds to the demand. For example, a program which guarantees services to English learners requires staffing, materials, professional development, testing, and of course available class time to deliver services. The objective demands more than just hiring specialists. When considering adding anything new that involves staffing, materials, professional development, testing, and class time, we want to examine whether there is room for more of those things in the organization. As we consider change, we're considering redirecting staff and reprioritizing the student's day. The easy part of planning is to want stuff. The hardest part is to prioritize when everything is good. If we're on the right track, we should stay on it. If we're on the wrong track, we need to change. Finally, the board has asked what to expect from here. We have included the ideas for the future in the backup. But first and foremost, what to expect is to stay the course with our plan. Ideas which we have launched in 06-07 will need to be sustained and expanded in the years ahead. But adding to the list, we want to look at topics which demand attention. New teacher induction, alternative education options, the role of visual and performing arts. These and many other topics are raised in the board's backup. Site and district staff are available tonight to assist the board in its discussion and input to the strategic planning process. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Peter.
Yeah, I have a question for you before you step down. Maybe you can flip back to the slide that shows the budget and the allocations and the various rankings. I wasn't here during the strategic planning process last year. Maybe if you could just sort of explain that chart and explain what the numbers mean in the ranking columns, in particular year one for myself, and who was involved in that process.
I'd be happy to. We went to a variety of constituencies within the district with many, many more ideas than what you see on the budget. We calculated that we were trying to budget approximately $800,000 of ongoing money. And we went to elementary principals, we went to secondary principals, we went to curriculum council, we went to classified management, and we had taken input from PTA presidents, but we didn't get down to the $800,000 question. The question was, if you had $800,000, which of this much larger list would you include? And we had all of the items priced out so that an individual would know when they hit the $800,000 mark. We then went back and we looked at those items which appeared most often on every individual's, all of the individual's $800,000 list. The year one counts that you're looking at, Reading Recovery says 18. We had 37 people who voted, if you want to call it that, and 18 of those had Reading Recovery in their $800,000 list. It's important for the board to understand that the sheer number of votes doesn't really tell the whole story. When you're going to classified management, when you're going to secondary principals, the concept of a first grade reading program may not play in the same way that it does with elementary folks. But it gives you a kind of feel for how everybody considered that. We actually ranked all of the items by what appeared most often to what appeared least often. But again, taking into account that different constituencies were looking at the questions differently, it became my responsibility to develop a recommendation for the board. What you're looking at right now is the recommendation that the superintendent brought forward to the board, And I wanted to, first of all, show you that this was my $800,000 recommendation to the board, but also to show how many individual votes each of the items on my recommendation had received from the composite group.
Yeah, then, okay, I'm glad you clarified that, because I thought that was, originally they were numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So 18 out of the 37 voted for reading recovery for the year 1. Then what's the 27 for the year 2?
Yeah, we had items costed, some of which you could cover the ongoing cost for the program in 1 year, and people could decide whether they wanted to spend some of their $800,000 on that item. Some of the items had different year two costs, and people were asked to rank where they would put this item in year two. Reading recovery was one of those items that had a year two cost. It happened to be a negative cost because we estimated we could run the program more cheaply in the second year than the first. And so virtually everybody put year two reading recovery, at least 27 of the 37 people put that cost reduction in year two. If you look at something like late bus after school, 13 people had put that as in their $800,000 choice for year one. 12 people said, it's important to me, but it's not important to me in year one. I would put it in my $800,000 list for year two. So you see a 13 for year one and a 12 for year two.
A couple of things. I wanted to recognize everybody who's here tonight and also Please. Mention the fact that this is an ongoing project, and that Dr. Matakovich and Damian Bennett has spent a lot of time coalescing the information along with Dr. Valentine. And I know that when funds are available, sometimes it's harder to make the right decisions rather than actually taking programs away when funds aren't available, which a lot of us were involved in also several years ago. And I was curious as to what everyone is projecting, and Dr. Valentine, you can help me with this, in terms of how progress will be measured and when would be an appropriate time to discuss that in the future relative to how things are being implemented, what results are being achieved, because I think the discussion about the professional learning community that Damian discussed and the response to the intervention models that are discussed throughout are exciting concepts relative to how that impacts the programs.
Thank you. Given that the focus of the strategic plan is closing the achievement gap, the data that we shared, and I can flip back to that, the data that we shared, which demonstrates the achievement gap, is actually expressed in terms of the percentage of students who score proficient in language arts and math in those subgroups that we've identified as target populations. Our goal is to raise the percentage of students who are proficient in language arts and mathematics in those groups. So that metric is fairly well in times during the school year. We've dedicated resources to provide additional hours of help to sites and to employees during those peak load times. The metric we would use to evaluate that would be that, did we do what we said we were going to do, or didn't we do what we said we were going to do? And so we would look at those kinds of metrics for those kinds of items.
Okay. In looking at the chart that you have up there on the list, on the board, having read through the book a couple of times, actually, because I was really pleased with it. I thought this was a lot of work, and it was well done. But I also, by the time I went through it the second time, I felt it was a lot of work, and it's a lot of pages. And my idea of a strategic plan basically is a outline where you list, like each one of these areas would be broken down. Just for an example, you're talking about special ed. Okay, this would be the special ed area. And under that, we would have what's been done for the last 5 years, or any kind of figures that we have that we can use. What are we doing now? And then, because it is a strategic plan, what we hope to accomplish in the next 5 years. so that when we sit down with this, and I called Chris and others and talked about it because I had hoped that we would have more baseline information on these areas. Now, some of them I understand we're not going to be able, some of them are brand new areas that you're proposing being included. So we start with the now and see if that actually has an effect, an improvement over the future. But I was kind of concerned that a lot of these areas fit together. There's a number of pages for special ed in something relative areas. There's a number of pages for reading programs and reading recovery and others. They could all go together so that we'd have a more outline type of format with the information underneath, with back history as much as we can, if we can, mm-hmm. what's happening right now this year, and then what we hope to have happen or plan for the future that would give us a more contained format to follow rather than having to go through all this individually. And I know Chris said maybe that, you know, this was a good outline to start with, a good base that we can go.
And I think I really appreciate that too. On this little page by page on each item that we're spending money on, it'd be kind of fun. I had questions I went through and different, you know, several little questions here and there, and it'd be fun to hear from principals, since they're here, they probably know more about some of these things, but I don't know exactly how to ask all those questions and if you guys want to go through that or not, but yeah, I have things I want to know, so I don't know when and how you want to do that. No?
Do you have specific questions that you'd like addressed?
Oh, I do questions, but why don't you go first?
Maybe going sort of, if we're going to go through this, so yeah, my recommendation was going to be to sort of start at the front and take it by section if we want and maybe talk about the results, then the budget, then drill into the individual items. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
Be happy to do that. Want to start with reading recovery then?
I'm not saying we should go through each and every page. I actually don't think that's required. I do have some questions, but just, you know, we started with the data up front, and I have a few comments I'd like to make about that, and then maybe on the budget pages, and then we could, you know, if we want to pick apart, I just have some general comments about the detail that's in the back. So can I keep going?
Please.
Excellent. I like the plan too, and the team and everybody that was involved. I know a lot of you contributed to this as well. And Ed, it might be useful to leave the data back up that you just had there. I couldn't help but do a little analysis, a little more math. I'm sorry, I don't have any handouts tonight. But I found the data really interesting. And you know, obviously the strategic plan is focused on closing the achievement gap. And that's an overarching objective. And, you know, the goal would be, I think, that all of the colored bars up there are at least as high as the blue bars and that they all keep going higher, you know, raising higher than that. That, you know, once the gap has been closed, everybody's on par and moving higher. But what I wanted to pick apart in the data was how well we're doing closing the gap with each of the individual subgroups that are up there. And you know, you look and you say, okay, the pink bars are getting higher and the yellow bars are getting higher and the blue bars are getting higher. That must all be. The ratio in 2001-2002 was 23%. And that jumps pretty steadily up to 51%. So, you know, we closed the gap 28%, if I did the math right. Russell, you can check that with your calculator, for students with disabilities. We sort of had moderate success over that five-year period with the socioeconomic disadvantaged group, and we only closed the gap 1% with the English learner group, and that's on the language arts test. And similar results, more or less, on the math tests as well. So what that says to me is if you now switch back to the budget page, Ed, and maybe put it up on the screen. Sort of my view from the business world is, you have an overarching goal or objective. You have a strategy or strategies that align behind that objective, and then the tactics and programs underneath that support that. You focus on to make all of that happen. And what I really liked about how this page was defined is there are several programs or strategies for each to address the needs of each individual group. And it really made it easy for me as a newcomer here to understand what programs we have to address, for example, closing the achievement gap for special ed. And so my recommendation, kind of skipping forward here, is that the detail pages that appear in the back of the book, I think it would be helpful to just at the top right corner indicate which programs or which subgroup those programs are, we're spending money on to address. I think that would help clarify it for me.
Regarding the choices section?
EL spec K6, the top of the second section there, which is closing the achievement gap.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're on the budget.
If you just added that to the detail page. So I think the plan is, now that I've sort of reviewed it, it's very clear, it's well-defined, it articulates where we're focusing our energies, and I like being able to refer back to the detail pages in the back of the plan, which give me more information about what we're trying to do. I think the only thing that's missing from those detail pages is I like the description, who's working on it, what the procedure is, the defined outcome. I think there should be an area at the bottom that talks about what the results are that we've seen in terms of performance against raising the achievement gap for each of these subgroups. So
we have that information. We can share some of those things tonight as the board wishes. For instance, reading recovery is something that's fully launched at this point. The results are obviously something that will develop during the course of the year. For proficiency scores, the tests are taken in April and May. The results come back in August. The absolute metric would come in sometime in the next fall, say a year from where we are right now.
Right.
And we would look at that. But we can give detail tonight on topics if you choose to.
Yeah, and I guess I'd like to follow along with what you're saying is, I think, I don't know if we can, if we can or should come up with this tonight, but I agree that what needs to arise out of this is a way for us to be able to look at this and say, yes, we're making progress in whatever groups we want to define, we're making progresses, and how we're going to define what that progress looks like, so that we can see that and so the public can be aware of that as well.
Another nice thing, and two, is having sort of multiple programs or tactics or strategies behind any one sort of overarching objective is that if one or two of them fail, but the other three succeed, you might achieve your overall results. And so it's always smart to have sort of more than one way to get to the end goal. The tough part, of course, is trying to identify which ones are working and which ones aren't, so that you can spend more effort on the ones that are and maybe ditch the ones that aren't.
You bet.
Yeah, to follow up with what David's saying, and this is something that I think a number of people here tonight can help me with, if we rely only on the test results to determine progress, are we missing any other method of determining what success is occurring at each of the school sites relative to those groups? I know this has a bigger discussion point relative to the requirements that the state and feds have put out, but how soon within the year, before you even get the test results, can you start defining success for student groups? Because I don't know if everybody who's involved with the EL students would now say that there's been so little progress in the last 5 years because that's what the test results say. There may be another side of the story. And is there another side of the story when you implement programs with certain groups that may not necessarily show up on test results?
So a question that you have is, above and beyond what we're suggesting is proficient.
Ms. Donger, if I may comment.
How's that? I jotted a few things down, and thank you for asking that question, Mr. Spatafore. I think that's an excellent question. It's a question that teachers ask every day. What are we doing? And are we doing what's in the best interest of our students? I just jotted down as I was looking at this. And here, one of the questions on page 14 in the strategic plan was, are we driven too much by No Child Left Behind? I thought that was an excellent question. I wrote here, I put, No Child Left Behind is a punitive program that leaves millions of children behind. It is a program that holds our best students hostage to the performance of our lowest performing students. If one segment of our school's population performs poorly, all are punished. An example of this is where my daughters go to school, and speaking as a parent, they both go to Pacheco. Pacheco's fifth year, I believe, as a failing school, identified by No Child Left Behind. I spent time at Pacheco. I sat in on classes. I know the teachers there. It's an outstanding school. It's why my wife and I, who are both teachers, it's why we fought to get our daughters in that school. It's why Greg Halfman, principal, sitting here, also fought to get his son in that school. Somewhere along the line, we have to ask the question, are we giving up too much to jump through these hoops and to score these scores? I talked to teachers who are saying some of their best projects, their most popular projects, are being pushed aside because they have to concentrate on teaching to the tests. I'll make a prediction here, and my prediction is that I'll just give a concern. My concern is that our scores aren't going to go up. They're going to go down. And the reason they're going to go down is because of what I just read.
Zerms here, who's our teacher leader. And through your support, we've been able to fund her training and allowed our program to move forward. And with the additional funding, you've given us the opportunity to hold a training class for additional teachers. So Mary would just like to maybe address a little bit about that, but more importantly, that we're able to reach more students who meet the requirement to have one-on-one reading instruction at the first grade level. So Mary, could you just give a brief update just to get us moving on that?
Hi, thank you very much for letting me come tonight, and thank you for the opportunity to train as a teacher leader last year. It's been a wonderful experience. This year we have 16 teachers who are considered continuing contact teachers. That means they've gone through their training and they're working with students on a day-to-day basis. We also have 6 new teachers who are in training this year, so we've expanded the number of teachers who are trained. We're looking at serving a minimum of 125 students this year, probably closer to 130 students in our first grade. So we're taking our very lowest performing first graders and we're providing them an intervention that's individualized to their personal needs. So we're truly trying to leave no child behind with reading recovery. You know, we take the children, we work with them 12 to 20 weeks. The goal is that when their series of lessons is discontinued, they'll be able to go back to their first grade classroom and be able to work with the average of the class. Looking at results for reading recovery, each of our students, we input data into a national database at the University of Ohio, and that data is all generated into a site report, which I would be happy to share with the board, to look at the results for reading recovery. Just looking at the number of students from last year, we had 109 students that we served in reading recovery, and of those 109, we had 71 of them that discontinued their series of lessons. That means that we're projecting that they'll be able to work in their first grade classroom and continue to learn and continue to extend their learning and not require any one-on-one tutoring. We had 20 students who were recommended for other interventions, and that could be an intervention anywhere from a small group, a literacy group in their classroom, it could be monitoring their classroom, it could be also a referral for additional testing and a referral into special ed for a long-term intervention. And we had...
Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
There was actually, when Wayne Brown was teacher leader in our district, he actually did a report where he looked at how students did after they had been in reading recovery and looking at standardized test scores. And I can't quote you the exact data, but what that report showed was that our students continued to make progress and continued to do well after they'd been in reading recovery.
Originally, there was a cutoff. I think it was either third or fourth grade. That was the final time that they looked at them in terms of are they still at grade level. And we had asked a number of years ago to have it expanded to sixth grade, seventh grade, mm-hmm. to really see, you know, a follow-through on this mm-hmm. program. And what we're talking about in one of the areas that I would like to see the in this strategic plan, of course, would be the reading recovery by itself. And with the back information that you've given us for the last 4 or 5 years, how we're doing now, basically you said 130 students are being served now, and at a cost of $165,000. And then next year, and then what we project for the future. That would be what I'd like to see on the plan. We project that next year so many are going to be served the year after and how much it's going to cost for those years. And along with that, have some follow-up testing done where the kids, not the testing, but just checking on them to see if, in fact, at fifth and sixth and seventh grade even, they're still reading at level, that our program is that substantial, then we can say we've got a plan. We've got a good thing going. Thank you.
I don't really understand what it is I'm trying to get at fully, but I'm looking at these comparisons of math and English language arts, the AYP comparisons. How are these numbers influenced year over year by the cohorts in arriving students? I'm thinking along the lines of special ed, English language learners, socioeconomically disadvantaged. To some extent, how does our student population makeup every year affect this, and is it a valid year-over-year comparison when it may not reflect? I mean, if we have more special ed kids in 2003, you might expect to see the proficiency and advanced numbers.
Facing more and more difficult challenges, as there are greater numbers of those students, you would expect your overall achievement to decline. And it's very difficult to kind of calculate the effect of that. I'm not sure that we have the data sophistication to be able to do it. It could be done, but the other point, though, is that the disaggregation of data allows you to ignore all of the students, if you will, and just focus upon the subgroup that you're talking about. And so the academic challenges of English learners 1 year are comparable to the academic challenges of English learners the next year. The question is, are they getting better or not?
I guess I want to go back to this idea of test results and decisions about how money is spent within the district. If the board was to adopt a policy that at the end of the next school year, unless you could show through data that a particular program increased the testing for a particular student in a particular group or in general, or the program would be dropped, if you couldn't show a numerical increase from that use of that program, would that be a fair way to determine the program's usefulness?
I think that would depend on a couple of things. One would be, and maybe more than a couple of things, one would be whether one felt that the program had a chance to be implemented in the fullest strength that the program could be implemented in the 1 year time span that was selected. If you felt in some way you were doing a watered down version of it, you'd be evaluating something other than the full effect of the program. It's part of the reason why I think there's some value in finding something and sticking with it long enough to really reach a conclusion about whether it's effective or not. So that's one issue. The other thing is that in the world of multiple interventions, being able to isolate which intervention either helped or hurt is sometimes difficult to do, especially in educational research.
But I do think you would want to look and see, is the pattern of attention that we are giving to kids producing results, or isn't it?
Well, again, and Mr. Schallenberger has a comment too. Again, I guess one of my concerns is, what are we comparing what to? And what are we saying? What do we want to see improvement? Is the bottom line for us that our students are at or above proficient level?
It's like this fabric, and the fabric is made up of a lot of threads. And if, for instance, we looked at our Read Naturally Fluency Lab, we have a monitoring system where we, and it's a nationally normed monitoring system, so we can measure kids' growth from the day they get into the lab until they progress through their 10-week session or however long it takes for them to make their goal. And we can statistically say for groups of kids and individual kids how much growth that they've made in reading fluency and comprehension. Now, that's an intervention. That's one intervention program in the blanket or the web of reading interventions and reading instruction. So we've also got reading recovery, and then we've got guided process reading, and then we have our double dose of reading. So you get this whole series of interventions, and you hope that for the specific subgroups that we're looking at, that over a period of time, those kids, that population grows. And so we can measure the individual program, and we can say in reading recovery, we've got the statistics to prove that the program is effective and viable. We can do that for Read Naturally Fluency Lab. We can do that for our math lab, which is the Math Steps Lab. For each of those individual programs, we can show progress over time. Now, the crucial question for us is, does the subgroup make the AYP at the end of the year? And so we hope that all of those programs will add up to growth over a period of time. But then you got to look at the factors that impinge on that. For instance, our EL population has a transiency rate of about 45% to 50%. So we're not measuring the same kids from year to year. And so that baseline of information changes every year. But over time, we still hope to see a general trend of improvement. And, you know, that's what we're seeing at our school, and I think that's what we're seeing in our district. And when you look at that, those green bars that are going up every year, then that's the real measure of growth.
You know, and I'm not sure. This is something that I haven't really thought about, was the effect of the transiency on our population.
Meet the state criteria, but I know that many of us at our sites do this. We look at each individual child's growth. So it may not make your AYP, but I get very, very excited about a child that's moved from below basic to basic, because I know that child has grown. It still won't put our score where you want it to be, but that may be something you may start thinking about, as opposed to a measure would be individual students. And that's where I feel that we, you know, that's when we feel that we've really achieved something.
Can I just broaden that answer a little bit? Where's SASE fitting in here, as far as you're making individual student assessments at your sites and knowing whether your interventions are working?
At elementary, for us, it isn't doing anything yet, but the Instructional Services Department, Mary Matakovich started that, has been exceptionally helpful. That's all on a database now. We just put our CD in our computer, and I can print it up, and you can see. It's really been amazing how much more sophisticated even we've all become at analyzing. I don't want to say this in a negative way, but I had a teacher come to me the other day, and she had 4 students that had not maintained or grown in math last year, and she came and told me exactly why each one of those 4 students, what the problem was. And I thought that is a much more sophisticated way of understanding what we're doing. I have no idea why, you know, some kids do well and not. She really had thought about it, analyzed it, and that's because of the data we have from the database. When I was at Hawthorne 8 years ago, we used to do that by hand. The Title I teachers used to take all that information and, on a grid and do it by hand. It's handed to us now, and it's been really supportive and wonderful.
Adrian was good enough to let me just do a follow-up question then. Thanks. Thank you, Adrian. That's been very helpful, Mary Lou and Don, to understand the specifics at each site. So I guess my question is, when we come back and this is evaluated further, how much flexibility do each of the sites have to advise the board that although this may not show up in test results, we see enough positive, we see enough students that are affected in a positive way by the programs that have been initiated where we think it should be either continued if it's one-time money or it could be modified in certain ways. Do we have the flexibility to have this discussion when you can come back and say at this site, here's what we've experienced and this is why we think this is beneficial? You may not see it in the numbers, but we're providing a more specified education to the kids because, you know,
every year at the end of the year, we compile a report on our primary intervention programs that we have. For instance, our reading recovery, our Read Naturally Fluency Lab, our math lab, our flashbacks program, and we compile the results in terms of this is where the base group started at, and this is how much growth they made throughout the year. So we do have statistics at the end of the year, statistics to state, you know, whether the program is viable.
Is that related to Esther? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the idea of multiple measures is something worth looking at, and we don't want to totally measure everything by AYP because that's, you know, is an oppressive thing that's laid onto schools and isn't totally productive, really. Looking back at our mission statement, it says the district guarantees to provide the highest quality programs and services, which will give all individuals the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical, creative, emotional, and social potential. And along the lines of not leaving anyone behind, not even the high-achieving kids, like Mr. Bedrigian's talking about, where it's mentioned here about art and music. And even though I love Dr. Valentine, we have a little tug of war. He wants to put this on one time, and I want it ongoing. You know, I think that we should continue these intervention programs. It's very worthwhile, and we do have to look at that. And there's pressure on administrators, especially, to keep those AYP scores going up. So that's sort of a given, whether we like it or not, and that, those are worthwhile. And we might want to just work on that this year. But I think in the long strategic plan, we have to, I would like to consider, this is my basic point, closing the achievement gap, not just in reading and math, but consider closing the achievement gap in individuals, like Mrs. Gooden's talking about, look at individuals, so that every individual has the feeling that they are achieving at a high level at something. And it might be music, and it might be art, and it might be a technology, or it might be industrial arts, or sewing, or something, so that if we did a self-assessment, perhaps a chart, where you ask all the kids in the school, do you feel like you're achieving, do you feel successful? All the students in the school feel like they're good at something, and they have a chance to get better at it on campus.
I wanted to speak in response to Mr. Spadafore's questions regarding, if I understood you, how do we measure the success of each of the interventions, each of the things that we've added into the plan, so we know with more than just our STAR testing if it's working, if it's effective, so we know if it should be continued or not. Ultimately, the STAR testing and the AYP is on all of our backs, and we are responsible to that, and it doesn't appear to be going away anytime soon. So with that knowledge, when I look at the programs that have been able to be put in place at my school as a result of the changes in the strategic plan, there's a real overlap of programs that I'm not sure we can flesh out it was the 4th through 6th grade AVID program and getting all those kids organized, and every child now has a binder, and you walk into any one of these classrooms and they know where they're at and they're using their binder and their planner, and they now know how to take two column notes and those kinds of things that we think are ultimately going to make better, more successful students. Or was it the EL specialist that is now full-time at my school? Was she the one that made the difference with those 4th grade EL students that happened to be there? Or was it the getting motivated by the daily, everyday etudes and getting a positive attitude and a song in their heart? It's hard to flesh out things that are not statistically based, like reading recovery, where we can tell you, this is the difference it made, made a positive impact, these specific children, this is the long-term effect. For some of these others, we're going to have to look for a while to see the growth, and I agree with what you said, Adrian. We may have to look at a different way of assessing it, be it even a parent piece, where parents tell us what they're seeing with their children. I don't know exactly what that would look like, but it's definitely more than just this STAR and AYP results.
Just really quickly, I wanted to capitalize on what Don said, and just that I think with programs, what we really are trying to build in is some sort of formative piece. So, you know, everything that we're looking at, we want to measure it throughout the year to see if students are making progress. And that's the whole piece that Don's outlined with all the interventions that he's mentioned, that there are those formative pieces where he can show growth at any given point for a given student or not. And if not, then his team gets back together to have that discussion. Why isn't this working, or why is it working? That sort of thing. Just checking points to see, is this intervention working for us or not? And I think that's a real shift. It's not a real shift, but that's what interventions really need, is some point where you can check in and say, okay, we've been doing this for 10 weeks or 20 weeks. Are we seeing any results? And then we engage in a discussion. And then, in like Dr. Valentine said, maybe the reason it's not working is because we're not implementing it right. Or, you know, maybe it's not working because this isn't what the student needed, or this isn't what we assessed. And those are all valuable, important questions that then, you know, guide our work to either continue or redirect or do all those kinds of things. So we're really looking for a program that's responsive and dynamic throughout the year, instead of just sort of throwing a whole bunch of stuff at the wall and then waiting for August to come and say, you know, what happened? And then, because I think in that situation, what Amy's talking about, you really don't know what works. You know, if you just did something and then you wait for these summative results to come in, you have no idea why your school went up or went down if you haven't stopped along the way to see what works. And so, you know, certainly when you look at the supporting documents here, each piece has an outcome at the bottom, you know, and we're seeking out even better, you know, ways to measure what it is that we're doing. And, you know, we're exploring other what other districts are doing and that sort of thing. And I think that information could be shared, you know, at different intervals, you know, depending on the program and the progress.
Basically, I agree very much with what many of you have said. If we look at set up our strategic plan where we see what's going on in the past as much as we can, any kind of test or whatever we've got, where it is now, and then we set the plan up for about 5 years. This would, I think, allow almost any area, if it slid a little the first year or two, if it weren't blooming right away, it give it a chance to kind of move along a little bit and maybe bring in, if the scores were sagging, we could bring in other support to show that even though they were going down, there are other things that were going up that were is important to us is this particular scores. And I think this is the way of most strategic plans. You don't do it for 1 year at a time. Like you said, throw it at the wall and see if it crawls off or just slides down to the bottom. And I think this is something I'd like to... I'm sorry, Chris. Yeah, slides down. Yeah, and I think this is something I'd like very much to incorporate in our strategic plan, if the rest of the board are in agreement with the background and then the present, and then we look at it each, maybe more than once a year, as long as you set a time limit like you did tonight.
The sum of this preliminary information is sort of baseline data present in the process that gets one of these programs initiated, and why would it be necessary to repeat it in summary fashion like this? I mean, in other words, if there isn't that baseline data and analysis already present, then why do we have a... I'm getting used to some new die bell and really...
Dibbles.
Dibbles. Oh, I haven't had enough trouble with foreign languages, so I'm going to have to get a glossary going. But do you see what I mean? If the formulation of the program that is in the strategic plan or one of the implementation objectives, that preliminary data gathering and baseline identification should have been done. Am I missing a boat somewhere here?
No, I don't think so, and that's why part of the data that we presented was the disaggregated data for several years and multiple grade levels and those kinds of things. And I think we do have to see what the trend data is in the school district regarding subpopulations and different students so that we will be able to tell whether we're making progress. There's some interest in trying to maintain enough simplicity that a human being can absorb it in a single sitting.
As a veteran of the old planning, strategic planning process, I highly recommend that we follow that.
I know Mr. Buckman would like to speak, and I would like to wrap it up shortly. It's 9:05 according to my watch. And that watch says quarter till, and my watch says 5 minutes till. What does your watch say, Mr. Miller? Okay. Mr. Buckman?
Okay, less than 2 minutes. First of all, several years ago, Finland celebrated the success of their new math program. And that success came 14 years after they implemented their new math program. And that's sometimes the best way to implement and to create change. The second point is I have a question, and it's probably been taken care of, but I'm not seeing it, so I want to ask this question. There are other districts in the state that are working on closing the achievement gap. CSBA gave 2 golden bells this year to 2 districts for their success in closing the achievement gap. Are we out looking slightly beyond our own district for some suggestions?
Plan. So when you look at closing the achievement gap for language learners, English learners, you can look at every school's plan and know that they have a detailed, specific plan addressing the needs of that targeted population. And so everything really all fits together. And I just want to compliment the staff on the hard work and their focus in terms of addressing the needs of these subgroups. And I don't know if anyone would like to share some input from their school site, because I know you want to close it up, but just to acknowledge the connection, you know, what Dr. Valentine has brought is a strategic plan that's focused on subgroups. Our school site councils are addressing this in their school plans with their site resources. And we will be able to show you results, multiple measures, other than just the state test results, to be able to guarantee to you that we're really focused on the targets that you've set for us. So.
And again, I just in the short time left, I would love to hear from some of the secondary teachers. Mr. Jones, secondary principals, I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you. I'd just like to make a recommendation. First of all, I want to say that I don't think there's any one of us in education who have been in it for many years that don't live with some conflict over testing and test results and crunching those numbers and making decisions based on those numbers, given that our dedication to understanding the needs of the whole child. That's our district's been dedicated to that for as long as I've been here, and I think we still are. So we continue to look at the whole child as we look at these other aspects of their education. But it was mentioned earlier that we're provided with data reports from instructional services that help us to make determinations about how our students are achieving, and from individual students to classes to whole groups of students. And I would recommend that each member of the board choose your principal, any principal, and make an appointment and sit down and have a simulated conversation with a principal as if you were presenting your objectives for the year, so that you can hear the conversations that we have with teachers based on the data that we get back from CSTs and high school exit exam results. I think it would really be enlightening for you to have that conversation, because we can so finely tune what we're doing with individual teacher objectives based on that information, on content cluster results, on what an individual is educated as they are now, and they're great. So if you're looking for a hands-on experience, that would be one that I would recommend.
Mr. Anderson, Mrs. Ross, do you have anything that you'd like to add? What's going on in the middle schools?
I'll just take one microphone. You know, we have, in listening to this conversation, it's a great conversation to have because it's one of those that we don't always get to engage in. We are very busy talking about a lot of things, and curriculum sometimes does get put on the back burner. And yet every single day we go to school and our kids are there and the teachers are doing that job. They're instructing. We have lots of targeted groups. We've just mentioned a few here, but I've got accelerated kids. I've got reading students. You know, I've got study skills kids. I've got the range, special ed, EL, you got them all. And every group you can imagine is walks onto our campuses every day. So these conversations are wonderful. And I think Will's comment about coming out to the schools, I think we would welcome you out there. We would like to have these conversations. Then you can decide, you know, how is it going? And we'd be glad to take you to classes. And I know we all have busy lives, but we do have that open. And just like we do for letting parents come on campus and go to classes, it'd be the same thing. So I'm just glad that we could hear the discussion that was going on tonight, the information that was presented from Dr. Valentine, the plan of where we're going. It's nice to know what the targets are. As opposed to not having a target. And so thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you. Mr. Zotovich and Mr. Frost, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Ooh, good one.
Just briefly, I also wanted to comment as we're going through this discussion and I look at the strategic plan that I've seen so many times, it's nice, as it was in our discussions, to note that elementaries, middles, and high schools are all reflected in this plan. You'll see here that they provided ELD support for the elementary schools, but we also got ELD sections at the middle and high school. I, at Los Osos Middle School, we've added two new ELD classes for our students, and I think that's tremendous support for those kids. We also have AVID, and that is from the elementary through the middle and all the way up to the high school, and concepts that we've really embraced and hope to bring to our campuses in this next year as we're studying it this year. So I really do think that this strategic plan and the things that are mentioned on here have helped the middle school just like they have helped the elementary and high schools.
Do you have anything you'd like to add? And then I know
kids for good test results. We're trying to reproduce kids that are academically intelligent when they move on into life 15, 20 years from now. They know what they're doing. They know why they're there. They can write a great essay. They know their English, math, social studies, and science. We have plenty of great art classes and music classes that they can be involved in. Those are very academic classes that also support the core areas. We have all the necessary support elements that we have. And I encourage you to come to the high school, or excuse me, to Morro Bay High School. We have, well, I apologize. I encourage you to come to Morro Bay High School and see the things we're doing and the energy that we have on campus and how we're moving forward. And it is about each individual student. It's about teachers focusing on what they teach so that the students learn, and teachers focusing then on, if they haven't learned something, how to adjust and move. It's a great staff that's really embracing many of the things that we've been doing, and it's just a real encouraging place to work at. And I see a lot of energy on campus and a lot of support from all the different avenues. So I think it's we've been blessed with all the resources that you've given us, and we have all the same, many of the things that Will said, and all of those special classes. As I look at data and talk with kids, they have become very, we're still casual in our beach area, but they are very positive in their academic education, and I think that's very, very good. So, thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes, sir.
Can I just say that it's a real pleasure to see this many administrators here at one time? It's always reassuring to see your faces personally and individually. Not going to forget Bruce, too. We appreciate you being here. But it always feels like things are in good hands. And some of us, some of you, I haven't seen as much. You know, we get around to the different schools. And some of you are really uncharacteristically quiet tonight. But at any rate, thanks for being here. And I enjoy seeing you all in our meeting.
And I guess nobody else has anything to say, it looks like, and we'll hit our 9 o'clock goal. Oh, Mrs. Roger, I'm sorry. Oh, Marilyn.
You're skating on thin ice there, Tuffy. I have
questions on this. I think one of the things that, that we as board members have an interest in is determining what the data we really want to have come out of this is and what format that needs to look like so that we as a board and, as I said before, that the community can understand and help make those comparisons as well. And this is a start, and so I think that's a challenge, and that's something that I think we as a board have an interest in. Is that correct from all board members? Then do we want to decide? I guess that's really the challenge we have right now. And I would just like to make a personal comment. As much as we vilify No Child Left Behind, it is the federal law, and I don't think we can ignore it. And we can certainly work to change it, but the penalties are great. And unfortunately, it's funny for me because when I was growing up, I remember distinctly, and perhaps other people do, the mantra that the Fed should stay out of local education. And boy, haven't things changed. On that note, it's 9 o'clock straight up according to that clock. Dr. Valentine, and then we're to adjourn.
Then we're as done as you want to be. Just want to remind the board that we will revisit this study session at the next board meeting. You'll have an opportunity to sort of let this perk for a while, and if you have other thoughts, please bring them back then.
Yay. Second half, I'll second half.